I'm not saying you sound like a kid on Christmas morning quite, but you're pretty close.
We meet again, Robert.
We do. We do.
Are you having a good week? I hope you're having a good week.
You know, I am having a better week. Visual Studio seems to have settled down. And I've been able to do a lot of good work. I still think, like I said today on Twitter, IIS Express is just awful. And it gives me grief. But for the most part, it's been a really good week. I've actually, now that we've gotten this application, you know, we were stuck on MVC3 for so long with these old MVC Telerec extensions that were deprecated way back in 2012. To suddenly find myself on MVC5 and on a Kendo release that was actually put into production this year is a little bit shocking to the system. But it's also great because I'm building a notification center right now, and I couldn't do that really before. You know, I couldn't use Signal IR and Signal R, and I couldn't use some of the Kendo stuff because of the MVC level, and everything was all just crazy. So now that those roadblocks are cleared, I'm actually getting to do cool new things again. So I might drag my programming skills into this decade sometime in the next 6 to 12 months. Wouldn't that be cool? How's your week been?
Yes, I've been going through a lot of hoops, but luckily things are finally calming down and life is returning to normal. We had that CSO last week, and so it will hopefully be good. I'm headed up to Idaho for my father's 70th birthday this weekend. So yeah, things are great.
Well, congratulations on the birthday of your dad. That's 70's pretty monumental.
Yeah. I have all these like random tasks that I need to do for my mom to get things printed and get things designed and all sorts of banners and things. But other than that, it should be good. In Microsoft news, did you see that Instagram is available for desktop?
I did. I even downloaded it.
This is the first time in ever probably where Windows got a feature before iOS. That kind of blows my mind.
There's not an iOS. What do you mean?
So there is no Instagram app for iPads.
Really?
Yeah. Really.
So their iOS app isn't built to scale to both form factors?
Nope. There's only an iPhone app. And there's definitely not a Mac app either.
Well, that is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, isn't that crazy? Like, I can browse Instagram natively. I mean, I know it's using, Facebook's little, cross-platform UI framework thing that's mostly web views. But I have a native app on my Surface for Instagram. So, like, nice, high-quality, large images. It's great.
Yep.
It's like the first time ever a top tier product or app gets a feature on Windows 10 first. It's amazing.
That is kind of insane to when you think about that. You stop for a moment and you think, well, have we ever, we've never been in that position before as like Windows fans, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that just doesn't happen. Everything goes to Mac and or to iOS first. Even on the iPad, it goes first.
Yeah.
That's just crazy. Well, good. It's good for them. I was reading the blog post today, and it kind of, after having this conversation in that context, now it feels really kind of, I don't know, dry and not as splashy as it probably could have been. I mean, that's a very solid point that this is not something that has, this is the first time this has happened on this platform that we know of. So why not make a much larger splashy kind of deal out of it? But oh well, maybe because it's not a UWP app.
Is it not a UWP app?
I don't think it is.
It's got to be.
Well, if it's there, I thought it was there. Well, maybe.
It's a UWP app, but the UWP wraps their custom framework.
Okay.
I mean, you can tell it's very webby, but at the same time, it's, I mean, it's still native and it still blows up. I mean, it's better than a web page and it's better than an iPhone app scaled up.
Well, and the consistency is pretty amazing. You know, this looks pretty much like the iOS app. Even if you go in and, you know, to hit the ellipses to get the more, that's the dialogue that pops up is pretty much the iOS dialogue. Looks exactly like it.
Yeah. It is kind of surprising. This is like use case number one, why you would do UWP. This app that I've been working on in my spare time, that's one of the big things. I mean, I'll spend the same amount of time to do Windows and Windows Mobile as I will just iOS. And then, I mean, there won't be any shared code base between iOS and macOS, or very little, I would think. So, pretty interesting. Did you also see that they came out with, it looks like Microsoft finally came out with, or I guess it's not official yet, they came out with their new Cache app?
It looks like it's in preview, invite only preview, although somebody found the link and you can install it. You really can't do anything with it unless you've been specifically invited.
It's a Win32 app. Why do you think that is? To run in the sys tray, maybe? I don't know. I honestly don't know why it would be. I find it fascinating that they I mean, is it? It's got to be like WPF or something, right?
Well, maybe.
I guess it's all speculation on our part. We have to download the file and
see what it's made out of. But regardless, it doesn't run on today's Windows mobile devices. So
that's the other question: is how are they going to? I mean, the whole point is like to. I would think that you'd want it on all of your devices.
Well, let's speculate a little bit about the Surface Phone.
Okay.
And whether or not we believe the conventional wisdom, if not kind of the rumor mill, that it's not going to be, there won't be an Intel-powered mobile device.
Right.
That's the hurdle, really. If that hurdle gets passed, then this becomes moot. So, obviously there's some design issues around existing apps and things like that. But, I mean, look at what they've done here. They've, according to the screenshots, they've stuck to the Windows 10 design language. So it looks like a UWP app. If you're doing stuff in the garage, you probably know something's coming. I mean, if you flush out, does this make any logical sense? Would you write an app like this? Would you actually do an app like this? Unless it's just a proving ground, say Win32 was the most convenient and easy thing, to do this garage app. And this is just a proof of concept and it's not what the final technology will be when it hits production. That's possible, but I don't know. Seems if mobility and productivity are the keys, then this thing needs to run on mobile. If the intent is for it to ever see the light of day.
Yeah, I could see them doing this in Win32 because they need some specific API that UWP doesn't have yet. And then I could see them doing another true UWP for the phone, similar to like back in the day when you had like the OneDrive client, and obviously that's a Win32 app. But then you have a mobile, which it was like at the time it was Silverlight or some other framework. But Who knows? I mean, you're still wanting a mobile Intel device, right?
It's not necessarily a personal want so much as it is it destroys a significant barrier. I mean, it's a double-edged sword, right? It destroys a significant barrier to getting Win32 apps running on mobile devices. But at the same time, that also undercuts UWP. So, of course, conceptually, if that same argument is true on the desktop, you know, what are they doing with Win32 apps? Well, they're giving you a way to package it and put it in the store. So if something similar was coming along, for example, this app, maybe that's how they're going to deliver it to the mobile app eventually. When mobile apps are actually capable of doing that. They're not, mobile's not capable of that right now, right?
No,
I didn't think so.
I could see. So here's my thing is if they were to do Win32, what I could see them doing, I think this is like such a niche situation they have with this app, because it's like they had to go through a lot of work to make this look like a UWP app.
Oh yeah, they did.
I mean, WPF out of the box is not gonna, I mean, it's gonna look like a classic, you know, classic Windows 7 style app. So you could totally make it look like this. I've made apps with WPF where the whole thing was redesigned from the ground up to not look anything like the default Windows 7 widgets. So they can totally do this. But then also getting sort of the responsiveness for the different mobile sizes. I mean, like you said, looking at it, it's like they kind of made it work and look like a UWP app from a responsive standpoint. So I don't see Microsoft wanting to be like, let's let everyone develop Win32 apps. You know, I don't see them like dumping a whole lot of resources into making a framework for Win32 that would be responsive. But I could see them saying, if you're using Continuum and you have an Intel based phone, you can run any Win32 in your Continuum mode. Then they don't have to worry about it. It's like, you got some legacy Win32 app that you need to run. Boom. There you go.
I wonder how HP would react to that.
Oh, well, that's a whole different ballgame.
You know, they're building this entire service around this virtualization technology of theirs to work specifically with Continuum. So, and the Elite X3. I don't know that they'd be very happy about that.
Well, okay. So bugginess aside, and you know me, I have a huge crush on ARM. But looking at the battery life of the Elite X3 versus the battery life of any previous Intel phone, I would take virtualization and ARM in a heartbeat. I would take the Elite X3 over like a Intel powered mobile phone. I mean, there has yet to be a success story. I mean, Intel got out of the mobile game, so I mean, this whole conversation is probably moot, but. I would definitely take, I mean, there's never been a successful Intel based mobile phone, and I don't see that change. And I don't know, maybe the Surface phone is actually going to be a Surface mobile, and you know, we can speculate about that stuff. But,
it is a little perplexing to me that Intel can't seem to get a mobile chip together. What is that all about? I mean, they're a chip. This is what they do. What I mean?
Yeah, and they have the best manufacturing process, the smallest manufacturing process. You know, I think it's probably, you know, just one of those things where it's like when you have a hammer, everything's a nail, and you know they have x86, and they're like x86 can solve everything, and. That just didn't quite work. I mean, they've bolted on so many things to x86 over the years. I mean, like this, all the new sleep states and everything that are now available that mimic ARM-like functionality, but still isn't quite there. So, and obviously the power management isn't there. So, I don't know. I just think that they probably just, they didn't care enough. I don't know. I don't have a better answer for that.
Well, that's a pretty poetic one. So we'll end that topic on that note.
So, what about this booking stuff that Microsoft did? What was your thoughts on that?
I think that's a really smart play. You know, building out Office, it's going to be interesting to see if they build out O365 in terms of services and features and things that you get with that in much the same way that they built out Azure. This is another one of those. It's a much larger offering, I think, in a lot of respects. I mean, it's a whole system there, but it's giving small business owners a fairly significant tool that taps into Facebook, which a lot of them use in to manage their presence online. And it, you know, it doesn't scream Microsoft so much. You know, it's an online service. So we'll see how it pans out. I do think that if they're going to go this route, they really should hook it up to more data points. Yelp being one, if they can swing that somehow. You know, lots of small business owners, most of the time they'll tell you people, at least my experience has been, they'll tell you people find them on Yelp. They don't find them on Facebook very much. At least they don't say that when they come in. So, but expanding that out, yeah, expand it out, build it out, add a service, make some money off of it. This is one of those things that, you know, is building out and offering a value add and justifying the price. And, you know, at some point you get people locked in and then their subscription prices go up slightly. And then suddenly Microsoft is not worried about revenue in that area anymore. So,
yeah, it's super smart. I mean, especially as you get into, you know, when you're a small business and you're just getting started out, you can get like one little Office 365 account and, you know, you set this up and you wire it up to your Facebook and then you have an easy booking management system. And then, you know, when let's say you roll out another store and you're starting to talk like CRM and you're like, well, where's all my data right now? Oh, it's with Microsoft. Oh, does Microsoft have a CRM product? Like Salesforce doesn't really go down market like that. They don't have something that is for, they're still very much that enterprise CRM company. Their smaller tier products are still expensive. So yeah, it's cool to see. I mean, it's cool to see them go from like these, you know, every 4 year releases of Office or whatever it was. And then now it's like, yeah, we had a feature that was ready. We're just going to launch it. No big deal.
Yeah. I mean, it is great that they're experimenting and they're trying new things. I, you know, the only fear that goes along with that is, you know, if you get people invested in something and then it doesn't work out, just ask Google. Google service users how that's worked for them in the past. I think that's a legitimate area of concern. We've seen that happen with a couple of things in the recent past. You know, messaging everywhere was one of those things, even though it was just limited to insider builds. You know, I don't know. Sometimes directions change, things don't work out, and they've got to make a decision. And I'd hate to see small business owners get wrapped up in a piece of software service that they can't really rely on long term. But we're going to think positively and think that that's not going to happen. It'll be around forever.
Yeah, I mean, they're not releasing. I mean, this is a full-fledged feature that they're, you know, they're releasing to the wild and to the public, and they're not putting an insider badge or a preview badge on it, right? So it's the real deal. What about the Skype stuff? The what was it? Human parity with speech recognition.
Yeah, that's a pretty monumental achievement. being able, the only thing that inhibits real-time translation, I mean, literally, how far behind this is a Star Trek-like universal translator built off of Skype? You know, they've already got the translation service. You know that you have to believe that a great deal of these advances that are being made at Microsoft Research are finding their way into the existing stuff. I mean, otherwise, what's the point?
You know,
they were basically, you know, it's been, I forget, 6 months since that, or 6 to 8 months, something like that, when we heard about, you know, Satya Nadella basically saying, you know, hey, research products. So, you know, to have this happen, that's a very big milestone to be able to have speech recognition that is on par with just a conversation with somebody over the phone. The computer can understand you as well as I understand you right now. And that's huge. It's interesting to me that Microsoft appears kind of poised to own this space to a large degree. Maybe not own it initially, but certainly lead it, because all of the big, you know, Watson was a big deal. You know, IBM coming, you know, bringing Watson to light, that was a big deal. But what's really happened on the front in terms of pushing new technology lately, in the AI space, it really does seem to be coming mostly from Microsoft. At least the bigger advances are.
I'd say Microsoft and Google are the two big AI players. I think everybody else is kind of in way behind. I mean,
I'm a little surprised when Benioff made that statement about Salesforce having AI. There wasn't quiet, you know, or somewhat audible snickering in the room.
The thing is like people only understand AI when you can show them something that's usable in their world. Otherwise, it's just this, you know, ephemeral piece of technology that you don't quite grasp, because you're like, that's great that you have AI, but what does it do for me? What about, do you have any, given your Outlook woes, do you have any thoughts on the Outlook Premium preview that they rolled out? Looks like anyone can join. I actually was thinking about joining.
Here's the thing. It is a preview, so this isn't, I can't be too critical. I went through the process. I was a live domains user, so I already have a custom domain email address.
Oh, that's right. You have a legacy. That's right.
So when I went through the setup, I said, I already have an email address. And I forget what the question was, but anyway, I have an existing account. Don't go buy me a domain. I've got one. I've already got a domain. Don't go buy me one. So it asked me what the email address as, and I put in my current MSA, and it says, great, that's available. Apparently because I'm signed in with that account. So that makes perfect sense. I went to a different Outlook account and tried it, and it told me that username, and that wasn't available, that email address. So that's also good. So I went through the process, and at the very end, I already have, and this is a little complicated. So when you set up live domains way back when, you had a root Hotmail account, basically, and that is the root at which you added this custom domain. So that was attached to that account. That account also had Outlook, not Outlook Premium, the ad-free Outlook. Mm-hmm. Apparently all my child domains from all the email accounts built off of that with this custom domain back then also inherited that ad-free Outlook. Because I still have it in this MSA, even though if I go look at my subscriptions for this MSA, it's not there. If I go log into the other email address, it is there, the old one. So Anyway, I go through the process. Everything's kosher. It tells me my thing's available. I get to the very end. It says, oh, you've got Outlook. You've got the premium ad-free experience at $19.95 a year. This comes with it. Like, okay, no problem. And then I click the continue button. It says I'm not going to be charged anything. I click the continue button. And it just recycles the same page over and over again. I never get past that. I can't get to any kind of management dashboard. So, I don't know. It did give me the proper DNS settings that I needed to go configure at my registrar, which I did. And all my email still works. So it's all working. Even after I made the DNS changes to the new stuff from the old Hotmail stuff, everything works great, but I still can't get in and manage it. If there's settings around it, I can't see them. I'm assuming that this just stuff's not built out yet. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if it works or not. I mean, I'm getting email, so great. Hopefully at some point, you know, when it's not in preview anymore, or if it gets further along, there'll be a management interface. And because, you know, I'd like to see how, you know, my mom and dad each have an account also that was built off of this. So, you know, their email works, but it's also running off of my DNS entries because I've got the domain. So, I haven't heard any complaints from them that they're not getting their email all of a sudden, which is good, but you know, I have no visibility to what's going on. So we'll see what happens.
Okay.
But I do like the fact that I can use Outlook. I always have. That's why I did it in the first place, even with Hotmail, is because I'm just a web interface person, with, you know, Hotmail and then Outlook. But I'm seriously tempted to upgrade, because it looks like there's some slight differences in feature set between the O365 Outlook and the consumer Outlook, even the consumer upgraded Outlook.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I've just screenshots look different. I'm like, okay, well that doesn't look exactly the same. It might be stylistic, but I want to investigate it because if it does give me a little bit more customization and I can alleviate some of the pain points that I've had with Outlook over since the upgrade, that would almost be worth the extra money. Gee, it almost sounds like that's by design.
Yeah. My whole thing is custom domains and getting off of Google App. So if it's $50 a year for five people, that's not too bad. I have to do the math to figure out if I should just get a, like an Outlook, like a proper Office 365 business account. And that might be a little bit better, but I don't know. Depends on if my parents still want their email address at our domain, our family domain. Another news, sounds like some football team, is it the, what football team is it?
Patriots. Bill Belichick. Oh yeah.
Bill Belichick. Okay. He's done with the Surface.
He's done with anything that apparently plugs into the wall.
Yeah, that's what it sounded like.
I mean, you go to that tweet by Zach Cox and you the screenshot and you just read the rant and it starts off. He starts talking about the Surface in like the first two sentences. And then it just goes into this long rambling diatribe about how nothing else works. The headsets don't work and this doesn't work and that fails all the time. And then he brings it back home at the very end and he goes, yeah, but I'm done with the tablets. And if you read to the end, you also find out he admits, oh, it was an experiment, he says, and he only used it for one preseason game. So of course, now here's this, of course, it's all in the headlines. Belichick, you know, slams the Surface, slams Microsoft, da 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 da. And of course, that couldn't be farther from the actual truth once you read what he says. But yeah, he's just, he's sitting out there in the lawn chair making everybody get off his lawn, his technological lawn. with a shotgun.
It seemed like he had a problem with like every piece of technology. It was like helmets are bad, oh, networks yeah. are bad. And then, oh yeah, this, I mean,
Said it himself. He prefers pen and paper. He came right out and said it. So, you know, it's why is anyone taking anything he says about any technology seriously? It's just a, you know, a big media thing.
Yeah. I think the funny thing is I remember them having, there was a big, I don't know, brouhaha, I guess, where surfaces were not working and everyone was like, the surface doesn't work and for the NFL. And it come to find out it was like a network issue. And it's like, in these scenarios, Microsoft just, they can't win. I mean, they've had so many bad PR moments with the Surface. Remember when they were calling them iPad-like devices? And I mean, it just seemed like really poorly thought out from a PR perspective to do this, but I don't know. The agreement with the MLB, the baseball, is they can use iPads, but they cannot have any network connectivity. So it's a little bit different than how the Surface works, where they have live internet access, or at least they're supposed to. And if you've ever been to a sporting event, you know how great getting data is. I mean, this just seems like so ill-advised, but what do I know about football? Absolutely nothing. Do you have any thoughts about, I mean, since we're talking about devices, do you have any thoughts about any additional thoughts about the October 26th event?
You know, there was the talk about the home hub.
Seems like more people are kicking around that idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like there's some smoke there.
There's a little bit of smoke there. There might be some music there too. To watch the smoke whiff by too.
There's going to be a fog machine.
I think the way I put it, this home hub might find its groove in a few places around the house. So I would, the speculation is fun. You know, seeing what people think is coming versus what I kind of hope is coming and what I've kind of heard might be coming is an interesting paradigm. But yeah, it's going to be kind of cool, I think. And I don't know. I'm more excited actually for whatever this is than I am for the Allen one.
Yeah.
I hope
they launch something that is not a computer.
Yeah, that would be good. It needs to have Cortana, they need to free that poor woman up from these shackles of a PC and put her in a mobile device that, you know, is standalone, that, you know, you can interact with and say, "Hey, I'm at my desktop. And I'm going to go into the kitchen and I've got my music playing and I'd like to hand that off. And now I want that music playing in there, or I want it to play to every one of those devices." What if you know, it's almost like a Sonos, you know, what if you could stream your music to every device in the house all at the same time? You know, those kinds of possibilities are interesting to think about. And yeah, I think it's one of the things that Microsoft has been woefully way behind on. Hopefully it's because they've been working to get it right for what they want it for, whatever that is. I don't know. I'm hoping that my desires and what they want it to be end up in the same boat, but we'll find out. It's going to be what, 7 days?
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you say like release Cortana from her shackles. I mean, she's got the best use of Cortana is on Windows Mobile, and that only has 1% market share. And I think if she has a chance to succeed, I think the desktop was a great step. I mean, absolutely absolutely needed. But this home hub could be like the calling card and really what gets the rest of the world interested, because she's going to be she's going to be way more useful than any other personal assistant. So we've talked about that a ton. So I hope it comes to fruition. I also hope my spec bumps come to fruition for Surface Book 1. I don't know. I've heard some sources say yes, some say no. I don't know. I'm just crossing my fingers. Did you see? And then I guess they have another event?
Yeah.
November 2nd?
Yeah, that just got announced today.
Okay.
I think
so. Do you think it's Skype Teams or do you think it's something else?
Let's see here. So Nadella is going to be in attendance. Kirk Konigsbauer, if I pronounce that correctly. And they will be discussing the changing nature of collaboration. That certainly points to Skype Teams.
Yeah.
What else would there be? I mean, there's really, unless there's something super secret that nobody knows about, but I can't think of anything else that they would want to schedule a New York event for other than to unveil something like that. So I'm looking forward to that. Actually, I don't dislike Slack entirely.
I think that's how everyone feels about Slack. Well, it's kind of freaky. I mean, you think about it. This is the people that started Slack are the people that created Flickr, and they sold it off. So you kind of have to wonder, like, are they doing this to sell it off? Or are they doing this because they want to build a really cool product?
Well, I'm sure that the rank and file folks that are there want to build a really good product. I mean, I think that's pretty evident. I will say this about them. They're really responsive. If there's an issue, they're pretty much responsive. Now, the one issue that I've had an ongoing problem with is if somebody posts a Twitter link that has a video in it, for whatever reason, if I open going to that channel, I don't even have to be in the channel that the video is posted in. I can be in a completely different channel and I will hear the audio of that video playing. It just starts playing no matter what channel I'm in. And I've literally had to go ask a bunch of guys, can y'all go delete that, please? Just don't post any more Twitter videos in here because, you know, I'm cruising along. I open Slack. I got my office door open. I hadn't bothered to turn my volume down. And all of a sudden some Girls Gone Wild thing starts playing because someone's posted something in the NSF room. So it's like, oh my God, turn the volume down. So, yeah, that's been a problem. And I reported that to them, I don't know, probably about 6 or 8 months ago. And it started happening again. And I reported it to them again about a month ago. And I did get a response back. They finally were able to reproduce it. So they're supposed to be fixing it. But
that's cool. I've never bothered with Slack support. So that's cool.
Yeah, they're totally responsive. I just, you know, I have trust issues in general. So
you did. So, remind me, you did QA in a former life, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. You're such a good custodian of using software. Like, you are the ideal user. I mean, you send feedback and like, for me, I'm like, this is broken. This is never going to get fixed. And I don't do anything about it. Like, you actually, like, the fact that you are so heavily engaged in the Windows Insider program and like you're sending feedback to Slack, and I like, seriously, that is awesome. I wish I was more like that.
Oh, I don't know that you want this compulsion because it's, yeah, that's where it comes from. But it's also, you know, I'm very susceptible to being frustrated by my tools not working. When I was at Whole Foods, if there was a bug in the software, I generally got assigned it because I don't know. It is an obsession with quality. That's why I'm so hard on Microsoft, because there are so many obvious things that are, to me anyway, obvious misses that a good QA person, if people had a good set of eyes on something and they were really paying attention to the usability on it and not just cranking out code, a lot of these usability problems wouldn't be there. And I get really frustrated with, like, the things with the Skype preview. You know, I posted feedback in the Insider program about that stupid moving page every time that connected dialogue comes on. It's been upvoted 41 times, but I'm not the only one that's posted it. It's been upvoted, I don't know how many of times, in other people's feedback. So other people, I mean, at first I thought, well, is this really just, am I just being too critical? No, people agree with me. This is stupid. Why is this in this app? And to not get any responsiveness back about that, nobody at Microsoft apparently sees this as an issue and wants to prioritize. Maybe it's on a backlog list somewhere. Maybe it's been, I remember seeing a note, hey, we're going to do something about the connecting dialogue. And then the next update, it changed colors. So I don't know if that's what they meant or there was something else coming down the pipe later. But I also know that the Skype preview updates have been seemingly painfully slow in terms of progress. So I don't know. Anyway, back to your original point. It's obsessive. It's obsessive and makes me not very popular with people. So it is a double-edged sword.
It is.
I get really bitchy about things that aren't right.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, like, no one, we kind of operate as humans. I think we operate under this assumption that we do our best and we try really hard. And because of that, what we do is perfect. And it's really hard, especially as developers. I mean, we're human, to get feedback back and say, oh, this is broken. It's like, what do you mean it's broken? And like, sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's hard to swallow and be like, yeah, I screwed up something. You know, I'm dumb.
I have pulled the Steve Jobs audibly, verbally, aggressively to people. You're doing it wrong. I've made that mistake before. Yeah. So I hear you. It is hard. It's a hard thing for developers to hear that their stuff isn't the way somebody else wants it.
Yeah. Let's see here. Speaking of software quality, did you see that they Microsoft announced a new build, 14.951?
Yes. I have it on my Surface Pro 3. I won't be getting it on any mobile devices, apparently, and neither will anyone else.
Yeah, that's not surprising.
It seems that it started out, I noticed it, that's stuck at 0%, as it said it found the update. It gave me the download button because it wasn't connected to anything, but I had a full battery. It said, hey, next time you're connected, we'll go ahead and download it. Well, I'm gonna download it now. Press the button, sits there and waits. When waits and waits and waits and waits at 0%, and nothing ever happens. And eventually, if you leave it alone, you come back to it, you'll be back to the original screen with the button on it.
Okay.
And I was, I saw Ginny on Twitter posted about it. She had the XL. I found the same issue with my XL. Then I booted up my 950 and that had the problem. And then Jason Howard, North Face Hiker on Twitter posted asking for people that were having a problem. And apparently it's a big deal.
Okay.
So it's stuck. If you're on the previous build, you're not getting 14951 on mobile tonight anyway. So, and there didn't look to be really much new.
Yeah, I was going to say, did it have anything special for mobile?
No. I mean, the blog post, when it finally went up, it really did look mostly like it was PC improvements. I mean, there was couple other things that were
the new camera UI.
Yeah, new camera. They did note, they mentioned that. That's a welcome change. The camera UI has kind of been kind of kludgy and difficult to use. Of course, I find myself very much baffled sometimes when I open the camera app in iOS. So I don't know that they have it much better over on that side of the fence. But yeah, camera app update seems like it'll be cool.
It looks very Snapchatty, which is kind of weird, but.
Well, that's kind of the, you know, the messaging app on iOS has gotten kind of that way to a large degree, you know, the stickers and everything else. So it's kind of the millennialization of our social apps is, you know, what else was in the PC?
My gosh. The greatest feature of all time, Windows and Linux interoperability. So my number one pet peeve with the Linux subsystem was that you couldn't launch Windows binaries. So that meant if you wanted to run, let's say you go and you install Git on Windows, and we've talked about this before, but if you go in and you install Git on Windows and then you want to run it from Linux, you couldn't. You would have to install Git for Linux. Well, now you can just call native Windows binaries out of Linux. So you can have the best of both worlds. You can just have one installation of Git. You can have one installation of Java. You can have one installation of, you know, whatever else. It's so much more convenient, and it's really starting to get rid of the need for like things like Cygwin and other, you know, command line tools for Windows. So they could have announced probably like UWP File Explorer is going to actually ship, and I would still be more interested in this feature.
I'm glad you're interested in it, because I'm not interested in it at all.
I know.
But no, that is actually, you know, it makes me wonder at what point does enough of that friction come down between the two to where it becomes much more difficult to tell where one starts and the other one stops.
Yeah. Yes. At some conference or some keynote or something, Nadella just recently said Windows is the most open platform. And while I don't know that I would go that far, it is the only platform that you can just straight up run two OSs in one. Without like VMs or, you know, any kind of fancy stuff like that. That's pretty rad. So it is really cool to see all the Linux stuff. And I mean, just as a coming to it from a, how can I get my job done? Seeing this stuff is just huge, like so very, very, very important.
With the wide variety of tools that you do have to use, I mean, being able to do all that on Windows with very little jumping back and forth has got to be a much better experience.
Yeah. So what's cool is like all the tooling that I have, you know, it will like my bash profile and all of that stuff, it'll just work, and I can just launch the subsystem like any old, like I would terminal on my Mac. And the added bonus is that I get, oh, do I need to use the strengths of Windows or do I need to use the strengths of Linux? Which one? And the blurring of those lines is just, it's getting more and more amazing. So, what else was in there? I guess, the developer mode stuff too.
The no more rebooting.
So this drives me nuts. So the fact that you have to reboot Windows so often is weird to me. Like my uptime on my Mac is like probably like 90 days. Wow. On my Windows, it's like a lot less than that. It's like, it's always wanting, Windows just loves to reboot.
It goes in fits and starts. So one of the biggest complaints of forever, at least I, you know, building your own machine was every 6 months, just having to wipe it and start all over again, just because, the boot times got ridiculous, and, you know, it just the whole thing, you had to reboot it constantly. Every little change that got made required a reboot. And then Windows 7 came along and a lot of that abated. It got much, much better. I mean, you could literally go through, very seldom could, I could actually, you know, being able to go into Windows Update and run Windows Update and get critical updates and not have to reboot the machine, that was very unusual and satisfying as a Windows user. And now we're back to what I can only assume is probably due to the nature of the underlying changes in Windows. It will get back to that eventually, I think, but we are in kind of a rough growing pains period.
It's like you install Visual Studio, got to reboot.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
Yeah, exactly.
Why do you need to reboot? This is an app.
You can't, whatever service is running, you can't shut it down and do what you need to do, really?
Yeah. That's the problem with an API-based OS versus a file-based OS. File-based OS, it's like, yeah, just write the file and you're done. But with an API-based file system, you have to, there's more crap you have to go through. Do you have anything else you wanted to cover on the Insider, the new Insider build?
They did make some inking improvements. And one of the things that they showed off at, I think it was Build, was the protractor.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
The whole stencils thing. But I don't know if that's, I seem to remember Brian Roper giving a demo on that. But I could be mistaken. This might be brand new. But then inking in photos, being able to, you know, open up a photo and, you know, basically go along and do inking. They've extended it to that app as well, which is kind of cool. So it does seem that over time, hopefully we'll start seeing more of this with this branch, that a lot of the promised improvements and implementations of things, APIs across Microsoft apps themselves, is finally starting to pick up a little bit of pace. Hopefully that will translate into other areas like Universal Dismiss for notifications, which we were promised to build and saw a demo of, and it's quiet. I hadn't heard a word about it by anybody lately. So, hopefully that'll eventually come along too. But yeah, it's interesting to see some new stuff get added that hopefully I keep, every time one of these gets posted, I look down the list and look for Bluetooth stability fixes. And I don't see any in this one. So.
All right. Sounds like they have earnings tomorrow too.
Yeah. And, you know, it always amazes me. So the article that caught my attention about this was the headline, "Even if Microsoft beats on earnings tomorrow, the stock still might tank." Well, we might all get hit by a meteor tomorrow, too. And that would be bad. But it just headlines. And then you start diving in. And it's basically this one analyst is expecting Microsoft to not post any loss at all. And if they post any loss at all, the stock's going to tank. I think the rationale would, that this would stop a revenue slide that dates back 5 quarters, as if somehow reducing the amount of lost revenue isn't progress. And if you're a stockholder, which I am, full disclosure, I'm perfectly happy to see the line continue to go in one direction. So whatever an analyst is expecting, that's about moving the stock price. That's not about any rational analysis to arbitrarily say, well, if they hit our estimates, everything's great. Your estimates most of the time suck. So I'm not going to hold Microsoft to that. As long as the trend line continues to where you see, it's like the poles flipping, where the revenue switch goes from one division to another. As long as we see that the line's still heading in the same direction towards lower losses, if any at all, that's perfectly acceptable to me.
Yeah, if they, I don't know. I try to stay out of that. You have anything else before I let you go?
I can't think of anything. If you've got any tips on integrating ASP.NET, MVC, and SignalR, I could use those.
That unfortunately is way out of my realm of capabilities.
Well, it is in mine as well, but I'll be diving into that tomorrow.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of a slow week. We've got the calm before the storm, really. Yeah. We're going to have some hardware announcements, but when we're kind of, it seems like Redstone 2's kicking along and we're starting to see some new things here. So it's good. The Linux features are like, I'm so wanting to put this on my desktop, but I know I shouldn't do that, so I'm not going to.
I'm not saying you sound like a kid on Christmas morning quite, but you're pretty close.
Yeah. Oh man, those features. It's just more and more reasons for me to switch back to Windows and do my daily work on it.
Well, truth be told, every time I boot the 950 XL up, I have that fleeting thought of, God, would Greg kill me if I went back?
The answer is yes.
Which is why I'm still on the iPhone.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, I'll let you go. Thanks for listening to the Cheeky Tech Podcast. You can subscribe at our website at cheeky.tech or your favorite podcasting app. You can also find us on Twitter. Robert is at the Cheeky Taurus, and I am at A Universe Away. And we'll be back next week. Thanks a lot.